an analysis of cancer registry data from 1988 to 2003.
Hello everybody, I'm Gabriela Kernan, I represent University of Massachusetts Lowell, and I have no financial disclosure, so. At first I would like to acknowledge my mentors, Cora Roloffs, who is PA on this project, Richard Klapp from Boston University, who was our consultant, and of course Tish Davis from Department of Public Health, who provided expertise and make the data set available, and International Mesothelioma Program, who founded the project. Okay. Sure. Is it better now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. See, I lost my voice in this hot weather, okay? I'm not used to hot weather. As Dr. Mazurek pointed out, mesothelioma and asbestos-related diseases have very long latency. And mesothelioma, the average latency is about 35 years plus, and that's basically the only cancer that is solely attributed to asbestos exposure. There are some unknown cases of people who developed mesothelioma not being exposed to asbestos, however, they remain a mystery. And this is how just comparison between the healthy lung and diseased lung. So as for now, there is not known cure for mesothelioma, which is not surprising. And the danger of inhaling asbestos fibers is that they are respirable. So once they get into your lung, they pretty much stay there. And there is right now there is debate if there is actually some clearance, but the scientific body has not resolved the issue. And there are some occupations that are historically exposed to asbestos, and that was mentioned by Dr. Mazurek, so I'm just going to show you this slide. And again, this is what's the distribution of meso cases around the United States, which is basically around the coasts and associated with these certain asbestos-related occupations. surprisingly, the cases of mesothelioma are not decreasing, they are increasing, and depending on the model, they are expected to be peaking between now to 2010. Again, there are different models going around, so it's very hard to predict when it's going to happen. However, if we figure out that asbestos was intensively used in 70s and a lot of the buildings are aging right now, then we can expect that along with demolishing the peak will be somewhere in the future. We used Massachusetts Cancer Registry data, which is one of the first cancer registry surveillance system established in the United States. Again, Richard Klapp was one of the founders. And it's mandatory in the state of Massachusetts that all health organizations with diagnostic capabilities have to report malignant neoplasms within 6 months of period. And usually gender, age, usual occupation, usual industry, smoking status are, as well as diagnostic information is collected. This is how it looks in Massachusetts. So we had a peak about 2000, and the mesothelioma cases by year decreased and then went up again. What's scary is that the adjusted standardized incidence rate of mesothelioma is much higher in Massachusetts than in the rest of the country. So this is why we try to figure out why and what can we do about this. That was the previous project, and in my study I tried also to compare the finding from the current surveillance system with the previous one, and when people were working on the previous report, there was no clear definition, there was no clear diagnosis of mesothelioma, so some kind of comparisons were not possible. This is what they found in looking at mesothelioma cases in between 82 and 87. Again, plumbers, pipe fitters were at higher risk, construction trades, construction laborers. But what's interesting here is that also the teachers and secretaries had increased risk of being diagnosed with mesothelioma. And that is also reflected in the top risky industries, where we had secondary schools and elementary schools, and also like insurance buildings or hospitals that were at increased risk of being diagnosed with mesothelioma. The aims of our current study was to look at the patterns of mesothelioma from 1998 to 2003, based on the surveillance system established at Department of Public Health in Massachusetts. So we looked at newly diagnosed cases of mesothelioma to determine the patterns, to determine which industries and occupations are associated with increased risk, and also how such a large database can be used for generating hypotheses and studying diseases. In the data, the biggest challenge of using such a database is that it's not perfect. So there are a lot of coding issues. There are a lot of issues where people who are gathering data and entry data would do it in not a unified way. However, we found about 1,424 cases of mesothelioma. Out of these, 553 were coded for industry, and about 532 were coded for occupation. There were a lot of unknowns in the data set. The strategy we applied was we used SOIC, which is NIOSH published standardized occupation and industry coding system. SOIC reports that about 30% coded industries and occupations are misclassified. So first, the biggest task was trying to clean the data. We used SAS PROC Transport to try to unify all the descriptive information and then applied logistic regression to compute standardized morbidity odds ratios to measure association between exposure and between exposed and unexposed group. We did various analysis like descriptive statistics, looking at age distribution and gender. We used case control analysis approach and again computed SMORs adjusted for age in three categories and gender. And this is just to illustrate that in final model, we used different approaches. First, we tried to look at how SMORs would differ if we include everybody, like unknowns or disabled, as occupational classification versus keeping only people with non-occupational status. And in the end, we defined that only cases of mesothelioma and comparison cancers with known occupation and known industry will be retained for the final analysis. All mesothelioma cases, we had more than 1,000, predominantly male and predominantly white. The age distribution reflects the latency period, as majority of the cases follow in the age group of 70 to 79. Our case definition was all mesothelioma cases based on histology, and lung cancers were excluded. Cases only with, again, non-occupational and industrial status were included, and cases younger than 20 years of age were excluded. Our reference group population were driven from all cancers that are believed not to be caused by asbestos. And in order to be a control or reference person, an individual had to also have a known occupational status. And these are our final results. Again, we came with they were consistent with previous report and previous findings. Insulation workers had the highest SMOR, boilermakers, plumbers, and steam heaters. We didn't detect teachers and secretaries this time. However, this may be due to fact that our database was larger and maybe there were some misclassification issues. What came out interesting was that military occupations were at increased risk for a mesothelioma. And if you compare with industry of U.S. Postal Service, it's quite possible, and that's our working hypothesis, that people who are discharged from military may have preferences in choosing their next job. So it could be possible that they ended up in U.S. Postal Service. So then it's not exposure to asbestos at U.S. Postal Service, maybe at previous military jobs. Again, that's just speculation. And summary of the findings, again, that the biggest challenge of working with this database was that it's not unified. However, it gives a lot of potential for looking at the patterns and looking at the current associations between occupation and industry versus any disease. Our findings were consistent with the previous ones. We achieved more statistical significance, which is not surprising, given that we did have more numbers to deal with. There were certain occupations that were present in both studies. There were certain occupations and industries that were present only in one of the studies, just like teachers or secretaries. In our studies, we had insulation workers or boilermakers, military and firefighters. The same for industries. There were some that are only present in one of them. We are aware that there are some issues in comparison both of these studies, like there were changes in occupational. There were changes in ICD codes, there were changes in diagnostic codes. When the 82 to 87 study was done, they used Fortran for analysis. Right now we have SAS, so we have much more to do with this. We are the strength of using surveillance system is, again, that it's a large database, it allows for stratification and study pattern. Usually there is some demographic information and some occupational information. Limitations, again, with usual industry and usual occupation, which what Dr. Smith was saying, that we really don't know what people are doing the whole life, and this is just the summary. And again, I mean, if it's possible to establish surveillance system, my recommendation would be just to do it in every single state for every single disease. And our recommendation is that the collected data should be unified, so we don't have to deal with coding issues like, someone being coded like retired plumber versus plumber retired, which is not recognized by SAS, and then we have to go through all the cleaning effort. And if you have 100,000 cases, you cannot do this manually. You have to use some kind of applications, which in our case was SOIC. And in the strategy we used, first we used SOIC to narrow the cases, then we cleaned the data set in SAS, then we used SOIC again to minimize, bias, the coder bias. And my greatest thanks to International Mesothelioma Program at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston for providing funding for this project. Department of Public Health, especially Davis and Phil Hunt for database, for providing database and expertise, and my mentors at UMass Lower, Cora Roloffs, David Krube, and Rebecca Gore for brainstorming and advising me on this project. Thank you very much.
Questions for Dr. Carney? Dr. Bain?
PMR, mm-hmm. Okay. And as far as I understand, you have three questions or three comments, okay, and I will try to address them the best I can. We ended up with 1,424 mesothelioma cases. However, out of these cases, not everybody had known occupation. There are a lot of cases that the occupation was blank, okay, or it was coded as unknown, retired, disabled. And this is why we try to analyze using different approaches. So first we put everybody together, like unknown with people who have had known occupation status. And we were getting different SMORs. So to unify our analysis, we decided that we will retain for the analysis only people with non-occupational status or industrial status, so at least those for whom we could code occupation and industry. Okay, still, it's possible that information that there is some misclassification in recording industry and occupation, but we felt that you know, it's not okay to put everybody together. I guess the future analysis would be to look at, do analysis on unknowns and see, but I mean really with what you compare. If you do. It's kind of tricky, and this is why, you know, one of our recommendations was that, you know, people who are entering the data or people who are gathering the data, it's just one question, okay, what was your occupation? And instead of unknown or, you know, currently retired or disabled, you can just ask one more question and from this retired person get, you know, answer because, you know, this person works somewhere. So that was one, I hope I answered one of your concerns. The other was with latency. I totally agree that, you know, we are talking with mesothelioma latency between 20 to, you know, whatever. Jay Gould didn't have an exposure to asbestos, but got mesothelioma too. So, I mean, it's I was talking about what's the average, and you know, people go from 20 to 35. And with teachers, we didn't find in the current study that teachers didn't show up as the group, you know, with increased risk of mesothelioma. That was the previous study that showed that teachers were having increased risk. Frankly, I don't have a clear answer right now, okay? The other occupation that we found with increased risk was U.S. Postal Service, which didn't show up before. So, I mean, that would require future analysis and digging into and trying to answer this question. But thank you very much for pointing this out. No, I mean logistically, and that's to my best knowledge, because I didn't witness this. Okay, I just was provided with information. Is that all organizations doing diagnostic of mesothelioma? They are collecting descriptive information, and this descriptive information goes to registry, and it's coded by trained coders. Okay, so you know it's so when I got the database, I mean I had all descriptive information, and I had all the codes. However, the codes often do not match. I mean, it would be ideal if you can train the coder to take into account descriptive information, like again, if someone is disabled and plumber, who this person, which category are we coding, okay? And if sometimes people, for industry, people reported the name of the industry. And again, for a trained coder, if it's known industry, they can figure out and code this. So that was, for me, the biggest challenge, because there was a gap between what was in descriptive data and what was in, coded. And so my recommendation would be, okay, if you can just train everybody to do the descriptive data the right way and the coded the right way, you know, great.
And how did you use
SOIC?
That program was applied to the data that was already coded?
No, that was to, I used SOIC to the descriptive using, I ran SOIC on the descriptive data. And we thought about combining SOIC with manual coding. However, that that would introduce bias, because you can't physically code 100,000 cases in the database. So what we did is that we ran, I ran SOIC on the descriptive data, compared how it is with coded data set, and I got about 40%. The coded data was right, so we just decided to use SOIC because there were a lot of missing occupations and missing information. So we used SOIC, okay, answering on descriptive data. Then we did clean the data to the best we could, to have all plumbers as plumbers and not plumber, retired plumber or whatever. And then we ran SOIC again. And we did a little validation study to see, how it compares. So, I mean, there are a lot of limitations in using surveillance data, but I mean, I think it's still great for, study the patterns.
I have two second questions.
Okay.
Now, the previous ICD-9
So this is that was one of the reasons why we use SOIC, because SOIC is supposed to account for this, and also is supposed to, when it counts industry, it also accounts for occupation, and when it counts occupation, it counts for industry. So I mean, in theory, it's supposed to be ideal for coding. I mean, but mm-hmm. as everything else, is you know, it's faulty too. Thank you.
I guess it's really difficult to do studies like this. I mean, 50% of data for industry and occupation is missing. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to know, is it feasible to validate this data, to collect this information from families, you know, from providers? Is there even a chance to get this data?
Well, again, that was not the scope of this project, but in theory, yes. Okay, you can go back, and if you have different approach and you know different project, you can collect the data and dig a little bit more. But in our case, we opted against because of confidentiality, and we were very, you know, Department of Public Health is very keen about confidentiality and all the procedures. So you can only do so much. And I mean, in ideal world, if we would like to obtain the funding for, you know, looking closely at the patterns, but it's quite possible, especially that we are not talking about, we have only thousands of mesothelioma cases.
Any other questions?
Do you have any workers' compensation?
Frankly, I don't know. I would assume so, but I don't know. Okay.
Thank you
so much. Thank you.
Great.